Well, they boldly went where no man or indeed woman had gone before, and then after a historic trip round the far side of the moon, the crew of the Artemis II mission boldly returned to Earth. Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christina Koch and Jeremy Hansen were safely in the arms of loved ones over the weekend after a journey in excess of 700,000 miles aboard their Orion capsule Integrity. I'm joined on the line now by one of our regular contributors, David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Good evening to you, David. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
David, we spoke in advance of liftoff 10 days ago or thereabouts. This particular mission garnered huge publicity right across the globe. I'm just curious to know, though, was anything really achieved, or was this essentially a really good, well-executed PR job by NASA?
Well, what's happened is the path to the moon is now open. So this was just a test flight. It went off almost perfectly, better than you could have hoped for a test flight. The next one next year, test the docking mechanisms. And then in 2028, they expect to put humans back on the moon for good. There could even be two missions, two different crewed missions in 2028. And two every year after that. About 2033, the moon base gets built, then people are living on the moon permanently. We currently have 7 astronauts on the International Space Station, 3 more on the Chinese Space Station. And once we've got people on the moon, we've really established our first outpost in the solar system. And this is all about having humans colonize the rest of space. It had to start somewhere. The Neil Armstrong gig on Apollo 11, even though he was an Irishman, was just a bit of a blip along the road, using space to fortunately, peacefully compete with the Soviet Union rather than having an arms race. And now actually there's a race on with China. So yes, this was an extremely important moment in history. Things have changed. This is where humans go back to the moon to stay.
Much was made of essentially going to the far side of the moon. Why was that important? I know it was done for the first time, but why was it so important and so much emphasis placed on it over the last 10 days?
Well, we'd never done it before with human eyes. So we have spacecraft that hug the surface of the moon and can take nice close-up pictures all the time. But the Apollo missions, they, when there were people left orbiting the moon, when the crew went down and came back up, they were very close to the surface of the moon. I think it's less than 100 miles. The moon's about 2,000 miles across, to put that in perspective. But this mission, its closest was just over 4,000 miles, twice the moon's distance. So if you get an overall perspective of the moon's far side, which we can't see from the Earth. The moon always keeps the same face pointed towards us. It's tidally locked. It happened after millions of years once the moon was formed. So you have to have spacecraft to look at the far side, and we hadn't had human eyes doing that. They saw parts of the moon that have never been seen by human eyes before, and human eyes interpret things differently to the way cameras take pictures. So that made the mission historic. There are so many other firsts. I don't know if you're going to ask me about them, but I can't stop telling you. The first woman, female astronaut to go around the moon, the first person of color, the first non-American, Jeremy Hansen from the Canadian Space Agency, to go around the moon. They set distance records. It's just been an incredible mission. I watched every minute of it. Live on NASA's YouTube channel. We have a web page up on our own website giving people that link. Hopefully they all follow it as well. So 24 hours of video a day, 9 days a week. There are tricks to doing that which allow you to get some sleep thanks to YouTube. Have a read of the website and you'll see how we did it. And then the press conferences afterwards summed it all up beautifully.
Yes, it was perfectly executed, no question about that. Perhaps one or two minor, very minor issues at the start. But we have been on the moon before. Why is it necessary now to carry out all of these tests over the next couple of years before humanity will actually arrive on the moon and remain there?
Well, ask yourself this question. Is there anybody alive who doesn't believe that the future of the human race is out in space? The Earth is tiny in the universe. Now, whether you think we're going to go there in years, which the current new administrator of NASA, Jared Isaacman, does, or decades, or centuries, or millennia, I think we all have to agree that as sure as death and taxes, humans are going to end up in space. And this is where it begins. And, you know, there's a bit of political will behind it now, because China has said it's going to colonize the moon starting 2030. And there are certain things you could do on the moon that are trickier or more expensive on the Earth. It'll be expensive to begin with, but the cost of things comes down to the material costs eventually when you do things at scale. And there's water at the south pole of the moon that you can use not just to keep astronauts alive, but you can split up with sunlight and make rocket fuel out of it. So then you can use a staging post to Mars, which the new administrator, Jared Isaacman, has said they're going to do. So it's a very important step. And to put this in context again, because we've talked, you and I, about the International Space Station over the years and how you can see it flying over the Earth. It's only 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface. It's 400,000. That's 1,000 times further to get to the moon. And it turns out it's roughly 1,000 times further than the moon to get to Mars. And Mars has got an atmosphere. So that's higher gravity. The gravity on the moon is 1/6. The gravity on Mars is over 1/3. So it'll be more conducive for human life. So this is the future. And we saw it unfolding before our very eyes during that 9-day mission.
Is this in effect, though, a race to colonize the moon, and whoever gets there first can almost, as it were, say that they own it? Or is the law on space well established, or could it be subject to challenge?
There is some space law, actually space lawyers these days. The problem is low Earth orbit is being messed up by all these communication satellites, Starlinks and others. Elon Musk's not the only one to blame. Jeff Bezos has his iron in the fire, but the Chinese are going to put up tens of thousands. And the latest idea is to have the data centers in space. That would put 1 million satellites up there. I can tell you they're already ruining my photographs and many that are sent into Astronomy Ireland magazine. And to me, this is like polluting the oceans of the Earth with plastic, only we're doing it deliberately in space, and somebody needs to step in with a bit more space law. But, you know, whoever gets there first usually has the major claim to what real estate there is up there. So what's up there? The water. The important thing about the water is it's in 1/6 gravity, so you don't need as much fuel to get off the surface of the moon. There's also things like helium-3, which is a nuclear fuel that we could use. You know, we're just beginning to get fusion reactors, which are much cleaner than the old nuclear reactors we had. These could produce the ultimate future power for the human race in a clean way. And the moon has it in abundance compared to the Earth. So there are lots of people looking into all these kind of things, and the moon base would be a great staging post for everything from commercial activity to just making more room for humans. 8 billion people on this planet. We'll probably top out at 10 billion around 2050. And that's about all we can support, you know, because we can only support that many humans because of our technology, the advanced farming techniques that we have. Eventually, you're going to run out of land and fresh water, which we need to feed any more people. So there's only ever going to be 10 billion people in the universe, or we're going to colonize space. And, you know, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, the world's two richest men, both own space companies. And they've said jointly on stage in public, they're going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. Now, there'll be tens of millions in other parts of space, pretty near the Earth, and hundreds of millions of people working in this industry. It's already a $1 trillion industry worldwide, roughly. And that's just set to grow. So it's exciting on so many levels. And whoever gets there first sort of makes the space law.
So, what is the time frame for this? I don't want to be overly facetious, but, you know, in due course, will we have a rocket version of Ryanair and all flying us to the moon very cheaply?
Yes, we will. We already have some commercial tourist operators already. Jeff Bezos has flown people as diverse as William Shatner up into space. And Katie Taylor into space, and lots of other private individuals. Now, the price tag's around $500,000 a seat at the moment. You only go for a few minutes. For $30 to $100 million, though, you could spend a week, 10 days, on the International Space Station. So it's very expensive at the beginning, as it was with any new technology in the past, when only the elites can afford it. But Richard Branson, with his Virgin Galactic, hopes to bring the price down when he's taking people into space at scale to around the price of a world cruise. And how many people, especially in their retirement, go off on world cruises? So, yeah, there will be Ryanairs in space one day in the future. There sort of already are. SpaceX, who are going to build the lunar lander for NASA, Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin, is also in there doing it as well. They've got both of them working on it, just in case one has any hiccups. When is it going to happen, you ask? Well, sooner rather than later. Jared Isaacman's a very interesting character. There was a bit of controversy when Trump proposed him as the NASA administrator and then found out he'd actually donated money to the Democrats and cancelled his proposal. But somehow they kissed and made up, and he reappointed him, and he seems to be doing an excellent job. A week before they left for the moon, there were 5 hours of NASA online videos on YouTube, on their YouTube channel, where they explained what they were going to do. They're going to cut all the red tape, get things going faster, 2 manned missions to the moon every year, build a moon base by 2033. He put a date on it. They didn't put a date on when they're going to Mars. You're obviously going to learn a lot along the way. It'd be a bit silly to do that this early on. But this man is determined to get there and get there quick. And he's a billionaire who spent his own money paying SpaceX to get him up into space, higher actually than the International Space Station. He set his own records. And again, he's done it with his own money. Now he's in charge of NASA with its huge budget. And the direction he's set out for it, I like.
Just a final thought before we finish, David. Professor Jim Ferriser, in his column in the Irish Times on Friday, was highly critical of this particular space exploration, and he concluded his piece with a short sentence, 4 words: leave the moon alone. Has he a point, do you think?
You know, there's international missions that have gone to places like the Antarctic, and it's worked quite well. Tourists can't go there. It's a protected site. There's a lot of research goes on, but it could be flocked to by tourists, but it isn't. So, you know, people can protect habitats if they want to. The moon is a large chunk of rock in space. There's no life up there. There's not much for us to protect. I think, you know, it would be like saying, should we protect the land around cities or in our countries? Humans have to make use of these things if they're to survive. And as long as we don't mess up the moon, or more importantly, Mars, where there might be life, or there could have been life in the past, they're, I think, more important to worry about. But the moon, I wouldn't be too concerned about it in that way. It's a stepping stone to the rest of the universe. It's on our doorstep. We could build space stations, but there's a lot of advantages having a permanent 2,000-mile rock orbiting your planet nearby. And I wouldn't agree with that stance at all. You know, the other thing about space travel and technology is it powers your economy. For every dollar that the U.S. taxpayer invests in space exploration, they get countless dollars back. People argue whether it's $3 to $10. So it's a few dollars, let's say, back into your economy. And look at the American economy, the world's biggest economy, certainly high tech. And a lot of that was spurred on by the Apollo missions, not just because 12 white males went to the moon, but because the companies that tendered for those NASA contracts after they developed all this technology, they knew how to do things with cutting-edge technology that they couldn't do before. One of the most important is the electronics industry. You know, we barely had transistors back then. Now, the smartphone you've got in your hand has got up the order of a trillion transistors in it, in your hand. That's a million transistors. If we could increase things by a factor of a million again in the next 50 years, what would the world look like? And whoever's economy does that will thrive.
Very good. Before we finish, any developments from your point of view in terms of Astronomy Ireland?
Yeah, there's loads of things happening in space. Big eclipses coming later in the year and all these kind of things. But on Sunday, have a look at the moon just after the sunset. A lovely thin crescent. And just below it, the planet Venus, that's now coming into evening skies, will be blazing away. By far the brightest thing in the sky. And have the two of them so close you could put your fist out at arm's length and cover the two of them on Sunday night. Actually, Sunday twilight is the best time. Don't leave it too late because they're quite low in the west where the sun went down. Watch out for that. Hopefully we'll have clear skies. Go to astronomy.ie and report what you see, or snap with your smartphone, and you'll be looking at the moon we've just been talking at, and you'll see the dark side of the moon is faintly lit up by sunlight reflected off the Earth. And we've all seen those incredible pictures of the Earth from space they've just sent back. So that's a big one for us. You can follow us free on social media, and if you can afford €1 a week, you can join Astronomy Ireland. We're the world's most popular astronomy society because we want to get beginners involved. There's a beautiful full-color magazine every month posted to people, a weekly email, and we try to get more people interested in space. We're not happy being the world's most popular. We want to get even more popular. So tell all your friends and family to join. Astronomy.ie is where you start.
Very good. David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, many thanks indeed for that. And I think David Moore will probably succeed, as they say, in selling coal to Newcastle or snow to the Eskimos. Anyway,